I don't want a pickle. I just want to ride on my motorcycle. Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is the Nokomoto Podcast, episode number 180. 180. We are, I am your host, MotoG Pete, and with me is your other host, Swiggy.
Yo.
Coming to you from Northern Colorado, where we had another one of our 300 days of sunshine that we get every year here. I gotta tell you, Swigs, today I walked into the Moto One podcast network studio president's office today. I haven't done this for a long time. A patron showed me an example of the merch that the patrons are receiving. And I pulled out the sticker that people are getting and I slammed it down on the desk and I said, "What the fuck is this?" So it seems that the stickers the patrons are getting has inverted colors. Now, he had some like bullshit, like, look, Patreon, like, you sent them the image and Patreon just prints them and whatever, has nothing to do with me. I didn't give a shit. I slapped him as hard as I could and I was like, fucking fix it. But I mean, it turns out actually upon second look, the stickers that people are getting, or at least that Mike got, are kind of cool looking. So that's actually a good reason to join the Patreon. This is the only way to get this cool inverted color sticker. So just by, I mean, a lot of things look cool in inverted colors, but this one especially looks good. So, I don't know, look into that. The mug turned out pretty well also. And, you know, in the meantime, it gives me something to berate the president about. So, Swigs, let's see here. What are we going to get into? We are going to continue our music series. And, oh boy, are we going to have some fun. This week, we're going to talk about scooter music. Now, before you skip the rest of the episode, this is going to be a lot more interesting than you might think. You're like, I'm already sort of bored of the idea of motorcycle music. Now you're going to talk about scooters, which I don't even fucking care about. Oh, no, 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 no. We're going on a journey around the world. We're going to the Caribbean. We're going to the UK. We're going to Detroit. We are talking about street gangs. We're gonna talk about a whole bunch of crazy shit with scooter music. It gets wild. We're going to do best worst bike in the world this week, as always. And we've got a little bit of emails and Patreon stuff. Not a whole lot, but we've got some, right?
We got a few.
Yeah, let's see with what's going on the Patreon first. So here's the thing with the Patreon. I got a message from one of the patrons today that was like, hey, so not a lot of like super exclusive content on the Patreon. And I was like, you know, you're right. I don't feel that we're obligated to put shit up here because, well, I thought the whole point of the Patreon was like, you're getting this show for free anyway. Some of you feel like maybe you would want to pay for that. So I don't know where this obligation of putting up extra stuff comes from, but it is a useful avenue to put up some other content, actually, that the show's not a great format for. So, for example, I think after we're done recording, I'm going to put up a couple screenshots of progress that we've made on the web app. And I put up a post earlier today teasing what might be some content for some future episodes. And I'm going to make an effort to try to put some things up there. So if you've been on the fence about joining the Patreon, okay, I think I will start actually putting up some exclusive content. Now, some weeks or whatever, that might just be me covering Kesha songs on ukulele or something. I can't guarantee it's all going to be super awesome. The show will definitely remain 100% motorcycle content. But if I'm just going to put up weird shit on the Patreon that's somehow not good enough content for the show or not appropriate content for the show, I can't promise you a consistent theme, is what I'm saying. But okay. So with that, I don't think there was anything that anyone sent us that was otherwise a something that we all need to know about. But I do know that we got a couple emails. Do you have email, Swigs?
Yeah, one sec.
Okay, I guess I'll keep filling time. So, yeah, as far as like posting weird things up on here as well, I realized that we got a couple shots of Swee's electric bike. I'm going to put some photos up of that because we've been talking about our kind of EV projects, our electric motorcycle project. So I realized, oh, yeah, there's a whole visual component to some of the things that we talk about. Maybe the Patreon's a good spot to put that stuff. Because I'm going to be honest, I really don't feel like putting in more effort into our show notes. It's a pain in the ass. And as I'm learning, as the web app that we're making then takes those show notes, I'm going to have to pay we're going to have to pay money to buy a proper font that doesn't turn all the punctuation into a little tiny picture that says not available in the free version. Bullshit. All right, Swigs, you got those brought up yet?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do we got?
So we got one from Gregory about biker music. And he says, when I think of biker music, I immediately think Allman Brothers and Southern Fork. I'm assuming that's folk, but it's a Southern Fork in general.
Southern rock. Yeah. Allman Brothers is like quintessential Southern rock.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense too. Yeah. I got to tell you, as a young college-aged hippie back in 1990, I attended the Allman Brothers concert at the Santa Fe Downs racetrack, and I was real intimidated by all the legit badass bikers there. Good times.
Yeah, so we were going to talk about this week some songs that we think are sort of more in the direction that biker music has landed or the direction it should go this week. I've got a couple great examples, songs I think people should listen to. So one is a David Allan Coe song called, it's like A Harley Someday or something like that. Now, as a song, it's not super exciting, but it's not a bad song by any means, but it's not super catchy. And it wasn't like a hit for David Allan Coe or anything like that. But from an artist, a musician who's normally so offensive and fucked up, this is a surprisingly cool song. It's a song about a dude that's catching a bunch of shit for riding a metric cruiser. And how he keeps talking about how it's gonna be a Harley someday. And then the song ends with David Allan Coe reminding everyone, hey, isn't this where we all started? And it's just an unexpected place to hear that message in, you know, because like David Allan Coe is about as like, you know, fucked up one percenter as it gets. I mean, David Allan Coe put out like a 100% racist album, like where every song like has the N-word in the title. He had his Triple X album with such wonderful tunes as I'm the Only Man That Can Make Linda Lovelace Gag, right? Like David Allan Coe's fucked up. This is one. It doesn't redeem the man, but this is one song with a surprisingly cool message. And yeah, so that's a good direction. I like that. You know, there's a lot of your standard songs that just have motorcycle just in the title, right? You know, like I think a lot of people are expecting us to talk a lot about Meatloaf. And it's not that Meatloaf isn't biker music, but it's definitely not your quintessential biker sound, is it?
Yeah, that's true.
So I would like it to go a sort of more Meatloaf direction in terms of what the general public thinks, but not just because motorcycle is in the lyrics of any of the songs. That's not a good enough reason, I don't think. But again, I want more people to send in suggestions. Allman Brothers is good because Allman Brothers is that Southern rock thing, when I was talking about sort of aggressive and reject, right? Southern rock was kind of the new metal of the 70s. Like, it was sort of popular. It was in the public sphere, but it was considered lesser music, just like Limp Bizkit and all that stuff was. And weirdly, I think a lot of guys that turned 40 in like 2003, they're still listening to Limp Bizkit because that was like the last moment they could try to barely be relevant with what the kids were listening to. And this will tie in heavily to the motorcycle sound systems episode that we're going to do in a few weeks. So, but Southern rock, yeah, that definitely ties into the whole theme, Allman Brothers. I want to hear more stuff from people. And I think the rest of the music from this week's episode will give people even more fuel. Let's see. Any other emails, Swigs?
I think those are the ones to read out on the podcast.
Okay. All right. So let's do best worst bike in the world this week. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Okay. So here we go. We have each chosen a bike this week. One is going to be the best bike in the world this week. And I think you can guess what the other one's going to be. We've done this every week for what? Almost 4 years? Over 4 years? It's been a minute. I think you know how it works, but in case some of you don't, here's the deal. You are going to have to send an email to contact@nokomotopodcast.com. Well, who knows? The app might be launched by the time some of you hear this. Well, I mean, it's going to be up like forever, so obviously some of you will have heard. But of the regular listeners we currently have, a percentage of you might have access to the app. But if you don't, you send an email to contact@nokomotopodcast.com. complaining about why we're wrong about whatever we're going to say is the best or worst bike in the world this week. But remember, it's just really a fun way to look at two different motorcycles in a way you wouldn't normally look at them. And remember, there's no crying in motorcycles because it's badass. All right, Swigs, you have best bike in the world this week.
Yep.
And are you ready to reveal it?
I am.
All right. And the best bike in the world this week is
the Bimoda DB2 Junior.
Whoa. Hold on. So the DB2 is awesome. I might like it better than the DB1. I'm not familiar with the DB2 Junior. So is this using like... Because Ducati does one of those things where they always make like the big boy motor and then a lower displacement version of it. Am I unaware that Bimoda decided to take a DB2 and give it the bullshit Panta motor?
No, this is a Desmo. But the way that they did this...
Well, no, the Panta was one of the Desmo motors.
This
is going to be the air-cooled...
Yeah, this is the... So, in Japan, they wanted to make a... Ducati wanted to make an under 400cc bike in order to take... huge advantage of the tax incentives for bikes under 400 cc's.
Right.
And they also want...
400's their licensing tier.
Yeah, it's the end of their second licensing tier is 400, yeah. So there was that. So Ducati took the already sleeved down 750 SS and sleeved that down... to 400 cc's, and they released that as the Ducati 400 SS. And then Bimoda, who had already made the DB2 off of the 900 motor, said, and I don't know why, because they already only did like a short production run of the DB2,
yeah,
of like 500 units or something in that range, and they said, well, fuck it, let's make a DB2 Junior. And they took the 400cc version of the bike, and they tricked it out like you wouldn't believe. Well, I mean, it's essentially as much expense and luxury and quality as a DB2.
So this is basically, what was that? What's that 250 V-twin two-stroke with the Suzuki motor, that Aprilia one, the RV? Oh my God. But this is a set, this is just one of those super cool small displacement racers that time's forgotten about.
Yeah. Well, also, I just don't think there were that many of them. And again, you could only get this in Japan or in or maybe New Zealand or Australia were really the only places you could get this.
Wait, why is this bike we're looking at got a Kawasaki badge on it?
Because that is the wrong picture. Because okay.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I copied the wrong tab here.
Whoa, they made a Tessie 400 out of it as well? Whoa.
I don't know if that's the same one.
It says 400. Yeah, it looks like it.
Okay, so this.
Whoa.
So this is the. Let me pull this up. This is great pod. Okay, here we go.
All right.
So this is the bike. And again, this is all the same features as the, this is everything you would expect in a DB2. You know, the same custom swing arm, the same bodywork. Also, the other thing about that made this work really well is that the, that Ducati didn't do anything to resize the Ducati 400 SS. So it's not a shrunk down bike like you see on a lot of small displacement motorcycles.
Right.
It's the same size as the 750.
Okay.
So, yeah. And now this little, you know, this little motor that's maybe getting 40 horsepower. I'm not sure if they did much to bump it up at Bimota, but there's... You've got all your Brembo brakes and your Öhlin suspension. And
Bimota always did things to the heads of these bikes just to give them a little extra. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So this is not a powerful bike.
No, it's just super rare sauce. It's just.
It's insanely rare.
It's crazy and fetishy.
And there's way more money and care put into this than any 400 can really justify.
Right. Yeah, it's immensely fun. It's pointless. It's unbelievably expensive. It's not practical. There's probably very little you can do to vintage race it. And if you do, you're going to be way too heavy. So it doesn't matter. It's not competitive in anything. It's just, oh, I have a super duper rare Bimota. And this was created for like 8 super rich Japanese businessmen in like the late 80s, early 90s. And there we go.
Well, it's weird to see this insane, like, luxury sport bike that was built off of a bike that was derivative of another bike that was derivative of another bike that was only created to get tax incentives and then turn it into this crazy expensive thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real strong argument for this being worst bike in the world this week as well. But I guess, you know, after I was mean to the DBX, I really do have a soft spot for all things Bimota. I would say I have to actually disagree with you. And now knowing that there's a Bimota Tessie 400 from the 1D version of the Bimota. Like, can you bring up a picture of that? Because that's going to be a wacky thing. The first gen Bimota Tessie is a real hard thing to love. I have emotionally found a way to do that, but I totally understand why a lot of people don't love it and, in fact, actively hate the way it looks. So if that has this ultra rare version of the sleeve down 400 Ducati V-twin like Panta motor.
I think this is it.
Let's bring up a picture. I'll know what this bike if I now that just from the name. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Look at that. Man, at only $15,000 for one of these? Okay, you laugh, but it's kind of hard to find bimotas in that price range, honestly. Mm-hmm. It really is. This would be...
Oh, this is 1,800 miles.
This, I mean, who knows what year that sold, actually. It's probably more like 30. This is probably like a listing from, 2002. And
yeah.
I would be into this. If I owned this, I would ride it like 3 days a year. And I would just sit on it because at whatever point I decide to give it up, it'll have risen with inflation. And yeah, this is one of those free motorcycles. Just because it's so weird. Someone like me or some big bimota enthusiast, this completes somebody's $2 million collection somewhere.
Yeah.
You know how like every once in a while you get a really, really great trade on like a Psyduck because someone forgot to grab one early on in their game, right? Not Psyduck. Yeah. What's the one with the like in Ruby Emerald with the fucking leaf on its head? Not Psy.
I have no idea.
Anyway,
in my day, it was all about getting your Kadabra.
Oh, right. Okay. Anyway, yeah. Every once in a while, you get a good trade on something. This, I bet if you sold it to the right person, it's worth $14,000 or $47,000. It just depends who wants to buy it, is my point. Oh, this is super. Is this the most fetishy bike we've ever looked at? It's hub center steering. It's bimoda. It has outlandish 90s styling.
It's technically kind of...
It's a super rare Ducati motor.
And it's Japanese domestic market.
And it's JDM. It's a JDM bimoda center hub steering rare Ducati motor. This might be the most like fuck you Cleveland Moto and your weird like 70s two stroke no one's ever heard of this bullshit. How about the fucking 97 Bimoda Tessie 400J1D?
Yeah, that's it's ticking a lot of boxes.
I'm into it. Okay. This is more of a joint effort. You know, you threw it to me, and then I got the alley-oop to really bring this one home. I love it. All right, cool. I don't think there's much to say about it now. All right, let's move on to worst bike in the world this week. And the worst bike in the world this week is, and it's going to break some hearts, the Fueling W3. Now, this is one of those ones where the machine itself is kind of awesome, but the story around it is so tragic / disgusting that I just don't know of a way to say this and have it ultimately be a best bike. So, it's Fueling, F-E-U-L-I-N-G, because that was the dude's real name. Unfortunately, he died in like 2002, Jim Fueling, from cancer. But before that, did a lot of bad ass shit. So the Fueling W3 is a bike, but it's not so much a bike as it's an engine and a modified frame. So this company, Fueling, which still exists without Jim, has continued to go on and do awesome shit and has all kinds of like crazy racing technology patents and things like that. and they continue to work with like a whole bunch of automotive companies, you know, car companies as well as bike companies and all kinds of stuff. They have had machines that hold land speed records and just all everything weird and cool you can imagine they've done. And they had this idea in like around 2000, like late 90s, to do a three-cylinder Harley Davidson. And originally the idea was to bump up the power, obviously, but they were going to do it in a way to keep costs down. Harley was only going to have to add 6 new part numbers to make this happen. And there was going to be like a 142 cubic inch three cylinder. So W setup, right? A three bank of motors with three cylinders, mm-hmm. or one cylinder for each bank, but a three bank motor essentially. And it was going to make like, you know, 150 something foot pounds of torque and like 120 horsepower. It was going to be pretty impressive. It was going to be heavy, but you know, a Harley motor is a 45 degree angle. So they were just going to put another 45 degree motor or a cylinder on there and get, you know, a 90 degree motor, like a Ducati L motor with just another one in the middle. Right. And essentially they were just going to create a new crank for this and just use all the Harley parts and put another one on and happy days. Look, we've got a three. What's better than a Harley? This, right? And it was the twin cam motor, which by and large people love. I know recently in the last like couple years, people have been like, oh no, there's problems with Harley motors. They eat up whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, cam gods, blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever though. But Harley, after they got invested in this project somewhat, very typically went, nah. So this was going to be in like 1999 or something, like $20,000, which was an outrageous price for a motorcycle in 1990 something. But there you go. It was going to take, I think it was going to be like a version of the Dyna, and the frame was going to be modified a little bit. And then that was it. So Harley was going to have to make another frame, and they were going to have like a couple extra parts in like the crank or whatever. And, you know, new crankcases, but it wasn't going to take a whole lot. Thus, it wasn't going to be like crazy, crazy expensive, just pretty expensive for the time, right? This was, mm-hmm. this was going to cost a little bit more than their top of the line, you know, ultra super electric crazy, ultra limited touring special edition things. And it was going to be a relatively stripped down cruiser, but it was going to be a thing. And I'm really learning that Harley is just the king of getting our dicks hard and then letting us down. Over the years, how much cool shit has Harley supposedly been involved in and just never made good on? Right?
It's, there's usually something ridiculous every 5 years or so.
Right. And this is one of those things. And I have to would have sold well.
There is just Buell over and over again.
Right. Yeah. So so here's the thing, though. This does still exist because, again, this company, this isn't really what this company does. This company does R&D and just crazy racing, you know, technology for a bunch of different people. I mean, they're involved in NASCAR and all sorts of other things, right? So they were like, fuck it, let's just make it. But let's make it the way we want to make it, since we don't have to deal with the Harley Davidson part numbers or the after, because there was another plan after that. They were like, well, why don't we just make a kit that people can alter their frames and then use Harley Davidson aftermarket parts? Because this was going to be a 2.5 liter three cylinder. So it was going to use, well, no, originally I think it was just going to be another standard jug, but then they're like, well, fuck it. Let's use the aftermarket bored out displacement. Let's do the big bore kit on each cylinder as well, right? And so what you can buy now, because you can buy this motor, is a 180 horsepower, 200 foot-pounds of torque. So peak horsepower at 5,000 RPM, peak torque at 3,000 RPM, right?
Okay.
Air-cooled, carbureted, three-cylinder W motor.
Okay.
That sounds pretty fun.
It does.
Now, you also had to adjust the steering angle to give that front cylinder room to come out behind the front wheel. So there was this caveat that you have to deal with this kind of long rake. It's not ridiculous, though. It's not crazy chopper. But it is a little bit out. It's not a standard Harley. It's not like you could just buy one of these motors and throw it into your current Harley. You do need the frame. But I think when you buy this motor, it comes with a frame. But because this company just did it as a sort of fuck you to Harley, we'll build it anyway. It is $100,000.
Okay.
They claim it has parts that it shares with Harley Davidson, but it doesn't. It has special valves. It has special valve springs. It has these weird patented, like this weird port thing on it. It has the craziest connecting rod you've ever seen. So the Conrod, it's like three rods all in one. So it's got one connecting rod that's normal and then two others that pivot off of it.
You know, if John Britton can sandcast an entire motor from scratch in his laundry room, what? I don't know how you... Help me understand. Like, how does...
Because they just built it totally uncompromised. Remember, the original version that used all Harley parts was going to have, like, you know, a little over 100 horsepower or something. And it was going to have, like, 120 foot-pounds of torque or whatever the original numbers were. This is their version of it with just zero compromise, fully built out.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, like over 100 horsepower, like our, you know, 100 to 120 or whatever it was supposedly going to be in 1999. This is back when all Harleys were like 66 horsepower.
Right.
Right. You know, 80 foot pounds of torque. So increasing everything by like 25, 30% or whatever it was a big deal, or even doubling the power, whatever it was going to be. But everything is different in this. Like the push rods are different. It's all special stuff. It just looks like a Harley twin cam with an extra jug on it, but it's actually not. Every single part of this is special magic, right?
Okay.
I mean, from the carburetors to everything is special shit in it to achieve these numbers. So it's $100,000 because they don't make a lot of them. It's got, like, I bet when you order one, they just machine a bunch of special shit and someone's got to hand build it. I mean, it's a $100,000 motor and frame, right? It's crazy expensive. I don't know what it really fits into in any kind of drag racing, if it does. I mean, this is a 180 horsepower motor and it's still just two valves per cylinder. I mean, there's a lot of special shit in here. It's real weird. It's real cool, but it's real weird. But the point is that there could have been a really, really cool, affordable version of this. But Harley was like, nah. And Harley didn't have to do any work. These people designed it, right? You know what this company also did? Before the Milwaukee 8, they designed a four-valve top end for Harley-Davidson that Harley-Davidson also turned down. But it's just like Harley's just been willfully stupid. I mean, why not like get it and make it available to whoever wants to pay the outrageous cost at least? Or have it be part of some, you know, super duper Screaming Eagle package thing or something. But no, Harley wants to nickel and dime you for every single one of those stages that you're going to go up, right? So it's all got to be, you know, sort of backwards compatible. Can't be having people put in a four valve system.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to charge them for everything all the way up to until they do the four valves? You know, how are we going to charge them for changing jets, right?
Yeah, I guess from that perspective, yeah, I can see how that doesn't really fit with the Harley business model. But yeah,
but looking at a picture of this motor, you know, how is every good old boy in the world just not going to cream their pants and just have to buy one, right? Because it's not like this is a group of guys who are super duper, you know, in love with practical machines. You know, they just want more in their bike. They want their bike to be more, right? In a world where some people see the trike as a viable alternative because it's like a motorcycle but more, right? How is this not like the coolest thing any of them have seen? They don't even need to understand its engineering. They'll be like, well, yours is two but mine's got three, right?
Yeah, it's
it's a no-brainer. Just make it available for the crazy people that want it. Even if today it was going to cost $48,000 or whatever, that's better than $100,000.
Well, it's $100,000 for a motor.
And if you still have to have your Harley Davidson as well. Exactly. So I wonder, like, why couldn't there have been one of these that? Because it's too late now. Like, Harley's moved on, right?
Mm.
They're not doing these air-cooled things anymore. It's just, well, I guess, no, the Milwaukee 8 still is, isn't it? I guess you could maybe do something like this with the Milwaukee, you know? But at this point, I'm sure fueling is just, like, pissed off. Harley's turned down enough awesome ideas from them. They're probably just like, fuck off. We're too busy, like, making like fuel system components for like the Monte Carlo NASCARs, like, you know, like, fuck off. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's 150 cubic inch W3 motorcycle engine. Yes, it makes the bike weigh a lot more, but that weight is like down where your ankles are. You're not going to feel it. So you're just going to get all the power. And if you go on the internet and listen to how these things sound as well, it is unreal. It's like someone's running a Harley and a Ducati right next to each other. It's crazy. And because everything's at 45 degree, it's a perfectly balanced motor.
Oh, that's good.
Hmm. So it's super smooth. I don't need the 180 horsepower version. I would take the 120 horsepower version. No problem. For like half the cost, no problem. No problem. That is a buttload of power to have on a cruiser. And for that super cool sound and that super smooth engine, you might get back a lot of people you lost to Gold Wings.
Probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just go for it. Even if you're going to make it $55,000 for the whole bike, right? You got to put the front wheel way the fuck out there. Harley, why don't you just go to some weird, like, Hossack-style front end while you're at it and just make this really crazy, truly new model, not just another Electra Glide of some variety. You know? But nope. Nope. Instead, we just have to wonder, like the Bronx, like all sorts of things with Buell, like all sorts of things that could have been with Livewire, like all sorts of things that could have been with their four-cylinder motors they abandoned in the 80s/early 90s, with all sorts of things that they try, that they teased us with, but no. It's just going to be the fucking same old, same old. Oh. Here's the Pan America. It's a new Harley Davidson. That's one bike. The rest is still just whatever. Remember when Harley Davidson, like 3 years ago, was like, we're going to have 106 new models over the next 4 years. And it's like, what's been new besides the Pan America and the Livewire? The Nothing. FXDR? They killed that.
Yeah, that's true. There's that. Well, there was the FXDR.
The fat blob or whatever. What's the fat boy? I guess we got that, which is just an FXDR with different foot positions and bodywork. The soft tails, I guess they changed the frame and people were pissed about them. So we got Monoshock. We were promised 108 or whatever, 100-something new bikes. And all we got was Monoshocks, the Pan America, and the Livewire.
Yeah, it's if we're being honest, it's it's 3 or 4 bikes. A new paint scheme does not count as a new model.
Does for Harley. I know Suzuki catches shit for bold new graphics. Harley Davidson is the bold new graphics company to beat them all, right?
Yes.
I have seen dudes rush into dealerships and be like, have you got the new paint jobs in yet? Because they have somehow managed to legitimize that philosophy to their customers. Suzuki gets a free pass as far as I'm concerned. Suzuki at least has the excuse for a lot of those styles of bikes. Like, I don't know how many more improvements you can make to a 1 liter inline four race bike. But how much water can you squeeze out of that rock? I don't need a new Gixxer every year. They're already like insane. And have been since, like, 2004. The fact that they've made any development in the last 15 years is ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
So go ahead, give them new bodywork and bold new graphics and not really change anything. I don't care. But I look at a Harley Davidson, and I see a lot of missed opportunities and a lot of areas of improvement, personally. So this motor, this frame, it's really cool, but the story is tragic. I don't know, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I would just say that it's something that could have been really awesome, but has gone down this ridiculous path that is now just realistically completely inaccessible unless you're a millionaire.
Yeah, it's in the territory of the Y2K.
Yeah.
Where, okay, you spend $100,000 on the motor and you got the frame, and then you bought a $30,000 Harley Davidson, you swapped all the components over, and now here you go, you've got this bike, and now you ride it around and you just look like a douchebag, because anyone that knows what it is like, oh, you have the kind of cash to pull this up. But it can't be a daily rider, right?
No.
It can only be a status symbol, where if it was something that came from a Harley dealer, it was like, oh, no, you did, instead of buying you know, a Ford F-350 King Ranch edition, you went for this because you're super single, I'm guessing. And
yeah,
you know, or you decided you're going to stick with your old 2003 F-250 and then now you're rolling with this and you're going to be paying on this for the next 20 years. But you know what? This is the jewel in your garage. This is the thing, right? And then you see people with them and you're just sort of like, yeah, like I want to work up to this one day. It's attainable. It's the thing, right?
Yeah.
But in its form now, it's just sort of a douchebaggy ass candy, look at me kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these, you know, when it comes to a lot of luxury cars, you know, there is something, it is good to have something that's expense, like ridiculously expensive and super high quality, but it doesn't need to be like, you know, Qatari oil tycoons levels of excess.
Right. Like the Subaru WRX STI has a lot more following online than any Lamborghini.
Right. And you know, when it comes to something like that, it should be in that price range that's, you know, if somebody who's kind of middle class just says like, this is the only thing I care about in my life, I'm going to put all of my disposable income and credit towards this after my house. Like, this will be my thing and will define my personality. As long as it's, like, within that attainable range, then it's something that can last and be kind of cool and, you know, you might actually see out in the wild.
Well, and it can become part of somebody's life. It's not just a poster, right? Otherwise, this might as well be, like, the James Bond submarine car. Like, okay, you showed it to me in a movie, but it's not, this is not really a part of the real world.
Right.
Yeah. And otherwise, they just exist. It's like I had this boss once. He was such a douchebag. And he was just the kind of fucking greasy Romanian douchebag that we've all seen pictures of do this. Because he was legitimately greasy and he was legitimately a douchebag and Romanian. He comes up to me once and he goes, look at this. I was at this car show. And it was just a bunch of pictures of him, like, doing that position where you like kneel down and like wrap your arms around yourself in front of expensive cars.
Oh, yeah.
And like the cars weren't even 100% in frame. It was just like 15 pictures of him posing next to cars as if he owned them. And I was like, I'm disgusted by this. Get away from me. You're trying to tell me that you saw a bunch of cool cars, but I'm seeing a bunch of pictures that I know you've already put on your Facebook that just imply that maybe you own these cars to somebody that maybe doesn't know you or something. Or let's say they do know you. Like, I mean, they know you don't own. Like, why are you? What is this about? What's happening here?
Yeah. And then, you know, honestly, a lot of the times when people end up talking about those kinds of cars, and it kind of becomes like, who would win in a fight, Batman or Spider-Man? Because nobody has any fucking clue. Nobody has any real world experience with these things. It's all just, it turns into a thought experiment.
I mean, the answer is Batman wins. It's hands down. Look, if Batman can be a reasonable match against Superman in some weird version, like, we all know that Superman destroys Spider-Man, right? It doesn't matter. Look, I don't care how much like Spider-Man is laying on the floor and replaying conversations with Mary Jane and his mom and his grandmother in his head. He's not gonna destroy the Man of Steel. Okay, he can have all the quiet emotional moments after being knocked through a building that he wants. He's not gonna rally to beat Superman. You know who doesn't need his grandma as inspiration to kick ass? Fucking Superman. All right. Sorry if I just ruined Spider-Man for everybody. All right. Let's talk about scooter music, I guess, right?
Let's take a quick break first.
Okay, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with that. All right, and we are back. Okay, in our ongoing motorcycle music series, I want to remind everyone, this is going to be really fun, and make sure you don't miss next week. I think right now we should decide that, so we got two more segments that we're super excited about in this series. One is the impact of powerful sound systems on motorcycle music, which is a fascinating subject, I think. It involves a lot of science that I made up, but whatever. And then there's the weird subculture of homemade metal and rap in the motocross community. I don't know which one I'm more excited for. Do not miss these episodes coming up. I'm teasing them both right now. I don't know which one we'll do next week. We may have to flip a coin because we are both super excited to talk about these things. But this week, we're talking about scooter music, which means we're talking about one of my favorite things, fucking punk rock. And we're talking about some other music as well, but punk rock. I love punk rock. So, there's a few things in this that we need to just get straight right off the bat. I'm going to have to do the impossible, which means right away, before we do anything else, I have to define what punk rock is, which I will acknowledge is a thing you can't actually do. And that kind of is the definition of punk rock in a weird way. So, rock and roll has traditionally been very anti-establishment, but punk rock is straight up nihilist. It's straight up, there is no establishment. Everything is bullshit, is what punk rock is. And it's so great because punk rock is a huge contradiction on itself. It is saying we are rejecting all culture, but to do it, we're all going to create this little subculture in exactly the same way, right? Punk rock is a paradox, and it always has been, and that's why it's so much fun, right? That's why the stereotypical idea at a punk rock show is you've got a whole bunch of little mini cliques, like it's that movie The Warriors, and yeah. then one of them is three dudes in horn-rimmed glasses and turtlenecks in the corner talking about how intellectual this all is, because there's this very, very deep undercurrent of rejection of all things, all standards, all everything in punk rock. Right? This is why punk rockers are gross. They're always like peeing on each other and shit, right? It's who can debase everything the most. And that defines how punk you are, right? That's like when you break a window, someone's like, man, that was punk as fuck, right? So how does this relate to scooters? Well, scooters are very, very old, but this idea of the Italian scooter, and that's what we're talking about when we talk about scooter music, is a very 20th century thing, right? Whereas cars, you know, cars go back to like 1890 or whatever, right? Like scooters in their sort of Italian form is very much not just a 20th century thing, a post-war thing, right? It would have been very easy to invent those before cars. And you can say maybe they did, but no, the idea of these Italian scooters in their Vespa Lambretta form, right? Those scooters definitely came after cars. In fact, they were there because cars were no longer viable, right? Scooters have always been an alternative, have always been looked down upon, were always for a lower class. They were always a sort of working man's values kind of thing. Even today, in their version in America, is like, oh, you're riding a moped, what'd you get, a DUI? Like, it's always been this thing where, you know, when you're riding a scooter, you might have a chip on your shoulder. You might be pissed off about what everyone's thinking about you. So, kind of like your gutter punks, you've got to come up with this way to justify your lifestyle. And it's so scootering in and of itself as a culture was a rejection of going, no, like fuck bicycles, like fuck cars, fuck buses, fuck trains. No, no. We reject everything. We're into scooters, right? and that's the punk rock scene. Like, we reject all establishment except this anarchy thing, right? You know, like, so being punk and being a scooterist are really kind of philosophically the same thing. Is any of this tracking at all for you, Swigs?
Yes.
Okay. So this is why, like, scooters are just punk as fuck. They always have been and always will be. And if you don't get it, you just kind of don't get it. But I've always had this idea that, one, scooters are legitimate transportation, because I've witnessed it throughout so much of my life. But second, if you want to be a certain way about it, scooters are kind of badass. Because for me, they've always had this very punk rock image. When I got into punk rock, it was the mid-90s. And you know, a lot of people are going to say, well, punk was already dead by then, bro. Like, nah, I don't know. So and specifically, I loved ska punk. So I was, and synth punk. So I was into things like bands like Skank and Pickle and Operation Ivy, you know, that kind of stuff. And this is when I was skateboarding and I had crazy colored hair and I was just a little fucking punk. And of course I was a poser, because all punks are posers. That's one of the crazy contradictions, right? Yeah, and scooters are a contradiction, right? They're super practical, but you get wet when it rains. Like, oh, but they're so, like, you know, they get such great mileage, but they don't go that fast. Like, it's all full of contradictions. It's all very punk. So why is there even specifically this extra strong bond? Well, it turns out the answer has to do with the Caribbean. So I'm not going to go into the crazy economic reasons why, or how this connects to the Beatles and Get Back or whatever, but just know that it does, that this weird thing happens. And, you know, you thought, like, ooh, 15 years ago, the Brits were complaining about asylum seekers and immigration and whatever. In the 60s, there was a huge influx of people from Jamaica especially, but I think kind of the Caribbean in general, into the UK. Laws were changed. People were allowed to do it. It had something to do with territories and things and whatever. And there was a window of time that this was a thing. So London is flooded with all these people with a completely different background, culture, and music than it was used to. And this is London, the swinging 60s, right? Or really all of Britain. Well, not all of Britain, but the major metropolitan areas, I believe. And they're bringing this weird music with them. And, well, what do young people do? They latch on to the new thing that's happening. And so these people brought with them a music called ska.
Is this why whenever I go somewhere with Google Maps, Google sends me a survey asking if they serve tapas here?
yeah. So ska music. Ska music, you may think you know what it is. It's a very specific thing. And Let me just play some here real quick and give you an idea. So basically, understand that like almost no one had heard much of something like this before. And it's like, it's sort of American, it's sort of not. Here, let's see if we can get some to play on my phone here. Oh, no. Fuck you. Fuck you, Google. Fuck you. I don't want to hear your ad. I don't want to fuck. Oh, my God. Ah, fuck you. Fuck off. Okay. Sorry, I hit the wrong thing, and YouTube started playing a thing. All right, we've got to try this again. Okay, so Scott, classic Scott, here we go. Let's just play one of these. There we go. This is ska music, right? We got our horns, we got our reggae beat, sort of. This is a very close musical relative to reggae, and it just kind of jams like this. There's not a lot of complexity to it. There's a lot of two chord ska songs. It just does this thing. I guess the most interesting thing it does is it does this thing called the tritone every once in a while, which is really important to punk rock. And so here we go. So we've got this music becoming super popular at almost exactly the same time. We have this weird thing happening where this super poor youth, this working class youth in the UK, is getting into scooters because it's their realistic option, right? They're already punk by scooting, but they just don't know it yet. And we get all these subcultures. We get scooter boys and we get skinheads who were not originally Nazis. And we get mods, right? Now, the mods are called mods because mod is short for modern. So the modern music, the modern sounds were very much like Motown, were very much soul music, R&B, right? That was one of the newest, craziest, weirdest things. That was what was offensive to old people's ears. Like, strangely enough, like, the psychedelia and all that stuff was way more mainstream, right? That was the dubstep of its time. Every fucking idiot was listening to that, right? But these kids that had their scooters and they were mods, whatever, they were more interested in the modern sound, right? They were like, well, what's coming from America? What's coming from the continent? Right. We're not interested in this Brit pop invasion bullshit. They couldn't have fucking cared less about the Beatles. So listening to this stuff, and then you get this ska influence. And then you get, so if you take this ska and that what we just played, and you take Motown and you put it together, you get this whole genre of music called mod. And I might get in trouble for playing this, but like you get bands like early stuff from The Who, and this is like halfway between Motown and ska. Like all right. the musical elements are there. This is how they sounded. I don't want to play too much of that. You get in major trouble for playing that shit. So. It becomes this mod sound. It is not psychedelia. It is not rock and roll. It is not soul. It is not pop. It is mod music. And there's all these mod bands that pop up, right? So that's one aspect of scooter music. And that goes off on its own branch for years. But the other branch, which kind of like stays with the ska and everything, that becomes punk, right? Now, to take this to its ultimate conclusion, I'll play for you what this music eventually turned into by like the 90s. But this is how deep this goes. Let's go Skankin, Pickle. What's a good one? Ooh, Fakin' Jamaican. What an appropriate song. So here. All these things. This is American kids in the 90s with their ska punk band, right? This is how strong this is in all punk rock music, this ska influence, right? They're still talking about Jamaica. They're still doing the reggae beats. They've still got the horns. They still do the same harmonies. All of that stuff. You know, or even... Like, look, when they do, like, rock and roll cover songs, right? They still put that reggae beat in there. Right? Oh, God, this is my... I just want to play some of this song, because this was one of my favorites when I was a kid. Oh, yeah, they were Canadian, too. So, it just goes on and on and on. So... You can talk about all the different subcultures of punk rockers and scooterists, and it's weird because a lot of these subcultures, you know, people will say, oh, well, that's not this kind of punk, that's oi punk, or that's this punk, that's gutter punk, that's whatever punk, and the scooter, like, the scooter subcultures are the same way, you know, and like, I don't know what the fuck, like, technically makes a rude boy versus a skinhead versus a scooter boy versus a whatever, because some of these groups that people will insist was a legitimate subculture might have just had eight people that just dressed all the same way one day. You could talk to Phil from Cleveland Moto, and he'll go into how certain like scooter punk guys identified themselves with like the color of their shoelaces and bullshit. And again, it's all just part of that punk rock contradiction where we're all going to reject everything, but then do the same thing at the same time. Right.
Yeah.
It by definition doesn't really exist because it has to be a rejection of everything, but then yet it has to be a thing because there's a group around it. Right. It only works because everybody's upset and can't agree on anything. Right.
Right.
So it's wonderful because to me, just the whole concept is fun because you just constantly have people accusing other people of not being real scooterists or not being real punks or not being real, you know, right? It's like
they just pin hobbyists.
Exactly. Know? Yeah. Yeah. They're all holding pins, you'll notice. And so with the Terry Pratchett drops, look at us. So, I'm going to go into some more details and musical examples here, but like, I feel like we've set the table now for what the philosophical connection is, why it's punk. There's a lot of subgroups. There's a lot of all this going on, but it's a Caribbean influence mixed with soul and Motown and all that stuff. Cause think ska plus Motown, add cheap distorted amps, you get punk rock, right? Mm-hmm. That's where this all comes from. It comes from these weird British poor kids that just decide. Now, I know there's a whole American Ramones punk thing. That's just convergent evolution as far as I'm concerned, right? It's like, you know, there's like two kinds of green tree snakes that have like completely different evolution, but they're like almost completely indistinguishable. Like when you look at them, they're just the same, but it's like,
or how like there's like 1,000 different species that all just kind of turned into crabs with no like genetic no common history whatsoever.
Right. So when you go back and you listen to very American-based punk rock, Ramones and all things from that, you know, New York Dolls or whatever you want to say, you won't hear that ska beat influence. Whereas with all the British stuff, you kind of will. And the American stuff like the Ramones isn't so hard on the anti-establishment part as well. It's a little more just let the good times roll. Like it's not so much like the American punk message was sort of like nothing matters. And the British punk was sort of like everything is shit. Right.
Yeah.
And it's an important difference. It's an important difference because, you know, there was no real reason to think that everything was lost in New York at the time, but there seemed to be much more of a reason to think that in the UK for some reason. So there we go. I don't know. So where are you at with your understanding? Like, what have you got so far, Swigs?
I mean, these are all things that I kind of knew to some degree, just kind of fleshed out, but I don't really know what you want me to contribute to the podcast with.
I'm just looking for anything. It's fine. So again, no, if you want to go back through like a bunch of punk rock album covers, you will see Vespas with the checker marks on them and all that stuff. They are part of the whole aesthetic. And to this day, it still is. Now, I was hoping there, Swigs, you were going to just inject for fun one of your favorite Scooter songs of all time, which is the music video for Len, Steal My Sunshine.
That is a good... Well, I mean, really...
Because this is a good time just to take a break from the discussion of what is and isn't a subculture and what is and isn't punk and what is and isn't mod. And just talk about some just weird... things that have just sort of adopted the scooters, like Oasis, for example. They have like a scooter on one of their album covers, and they kind of it's sort of like one of the things I love about Oasis is that with the worst like snotty attitude just implied that they were going to pick up the mantle of all things British culture. Like rock and roll, psychedelia, mod. Like they were just going, oh, everything that the generation before us built, we just get to inherit. With yeah. the snottiest attitude ever. And I find that endlessly entertaining about that. They would do things like include three bars of music lifted straight from a Beatles song and then claim the Beatles suck. Like, it's magical. Yeah. It's fucking magical.
Well, the British media was kind of happy to let them do it.
Until, oh, yeah.
Until they became a little too punk, and then they decided, you know what, this isn't really worth it.
I am forever... Yeah, so
I think it was right when their last album dropped, they realized, oh, yeah, these guys are a colossal pain in the ass.
I love them. They're perfect. I think if they broke today, they would be 10 times as successful. Because they would be somewhere in between, like, who's a band kind of making music sort of like that? I don't know, but it was like they had two troublemaking Justin Biebers in the band, you know? And I was I'm all about it. I'm so into it. Okay. But so they decided that, you know, sort of picking up the idea of like the Beatles legacy wasn't enough. They also had to have the Rolling Stones legacy, but that wasn't enough. They also had to have the Who's legacy. Right. So they wore like the long parka jackets and everything. And like, you know, we're dressing like what's-his-face from Quadrophenia. So there's no way we can talk about Scooter music without talking about Quadrophenia, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know, there is... Like, we all know that The Who had a rock opera called Tommy about a blind kid who was a prophet that could play pinball, right? Well, deaf, dumb, and blind. And Tommy is amazing, everyone knows. And lots of people have heard of Quadrophenia, but fewer people are aware that this is an entire, like, double LP rock opera album with hit songs and, like Tommy, an accompanying movie, commercially successful movie, that is... an entire, like, a just a great big long, like, hour and 40 minute or whatever love letter to the Brighton Mods and Rockers battle. It is a whole, like, narrative film about this. So, you know, we were talking about the early mod sound in The Who, and after that all kind of died down, The Who were always kind of still this mod band and you know, scooterists and everything underneath. So Pete Townsend just wrote this ridiculous, over-the-top rock opera that doesn't really include much of a mod or punk sound, but exists purely on the legacy that they were like a mod scene band when they got their start. And just made this huge movie about dudes riding around on Vespas and Lambrettas and then ultimately having a battle with dudes on motorcycles in a fucking tunnel. I think this needs to be discussed more in public, right? Like, this was, again, this was not just something that happened and no one noticed. This is one of the Who's like greatest out. Like when you talk to music critics and they talk about, you know, rock operas, the, oh yeah, Quadrophenia, that's a big one, right? Sting is in this movie.
Yeah. Well, he was also in the original Dune movie as well.
He's equally weird in both. I mean, he doesn't carry around a cat with no explanation in this one, but.
No, there was an explanation for the cat.
Well, wasn't it like the cat had to produce some sort of like hormone or the woman would die or something, but they left it out?
No, it was the Mentat that they had, the Atreides Mentat, whose name escapes me, that they had captured. The Harkonnen had given him a poison, and only the cat was genetically modified to produce the antidote.
It's amazing. Right, but the point is they don't explain that in the film. Sting just walks in with a fucking cat hooked like duct tape to something. Yeah. Like... I mean, I love it.
And but... oddly, it doesn't look out of place in his hands.
You know? It really doesn't. I will open... I still haven't seen the new one, but I am an apologist for the David Lynch Dune. I think it's wonderful. I think it's a great entry point for people that know nothing about Dune. I think it genuinely has gotten people interested in reading the books. Just like, what the fuck was that? Because every time someone sees Dune, someone has to go like, oh, you don't know anything about Dune, right? Kind of like punk rock, right? Like, oh, dude, I just got Rancid and out come the Wolves. Dude, you don't fucking know anything about rock, right? We should play some Rancid. Rancid is one of my favorites. But, let's see. What else have we got in weird scooter music? Because it's hard. This is what we were going to have Scooter Dan on this episode to correct us and help guide us through some of the finer points of the subcultures. And then, because each one of the scooter subcultures just has a brand of music named after it, pretty much. And it gets really fucking specific, which is great, because if it didn't get so specific, there wouldn't be anything to argue over, right?
Yeah.
Like the whole thing is built from tension and contradiction. So it's kind of hard to say anything more, but that is why scooter music is mod, and that is why scooter music is punk, and that is why scooter music is sometimes like 60s rock, like The Who and whatever. That's ultimately the historical breakdown in large brushstrokes, and why it has to do with Detroit, and why it has to do with Jamaica, and why it doesn't really have that much to do with New York. Not that that isn't legit, and that didn't later become scooter music as well, because already, you know, it was punk. It was just from a totally different genetic source.
Right.
And then because scooter was punk, it gets co-opted later. So I don't know. But, you know, like riding around on my scooter and listening to The Who, listening to Oasis, listening to punk, there is a thing about it that is different than listening to Fish or the Grateful Dead or golden oldies or whatever. There is something about those that suits it, and it has something to do with the fact, like, you're aware you're like people are staring at you. You're aware that people are like, who is this weirdo? And I don't know if it's like you're aware that people are thinking you're a weirdo in traffic, and you're like, well, I'm listening to the music that, you know, is from this scene, you know, back in the day. So that makes it what you're doing more legitimate and cool in your mind. Well, you know, people are like, who's this asshole on a Vespa? Or if there is something about like the two-stroke motors and just that sort of sound, that sort of thinner punk rock guitar sound, you know, not a lot of bass, lots of drums. I really should talk about punk rock and drumming and like the fast, like RPM rate of two-stroke motors.
Well, I think
there's a connection there.
I think this is something that's going to cross over into the sound system episode, but I think there is definitely this kind of instinctual thing that happens where when you're listening to music on your bike, because people can see you, you have this, everyone kind of like starts playing the music that matches what they think the image they're projecting is.
Yeah.
So for you, that goes straight to playing all of those things. For me, it's more of a weird, like, alternative thing. Like, probably the band I listen to most on the scooter is the Presidents of the USA.
That's a really oddly subversive band. I mean, as you know, they're one of my favorites as well, because they were sort of the closest you get to punk rock on MTV, because especially in the 90s when MTV was at the height of its power, it was all about image. And then here comes this band that insists we're not going to have an image. Yeah. That's at the heart of what that band is. Just, Kurt Cobain was so effortlessly Kurt Cobain, he couldn't help it. And then you just get hordes of people trying to imitate that, trying to go, that, how do I touch that? Right.
Right. Whereas the Presidents were like, you know, it is a lot less effort, but ripped jeans is maybe, even though it's not trying at all, it's actually a little too much of an image. We're going to need some clean boot cut jeans, you know?
Or whatever. Exactly. Like, let's just, you know, people, what's this? I can't remember. I'm a fan of the band, but I can't remember the lead singer bass player's name right now. But in an interview once, someone was like, what is Dune Buggy about? And he's like, it's literally about a spider in a tiny dune buggy in a sand pit. Like, it's not anything, you know? It's like, and likewise, Lump is just a woman in a swamp. Like, it's literally nothing. It's I love that band so much with their two and three string guitars. But likewise, amazing drummer. You know, I just said I was going to talk about this. It occurs to me that people say punk rock doesn't really have any musicianship, and this is going to be a great example to play some music here. Punk rock is loaded with musicianship. Was it David Byrne once said, I heard him say, you know, music is really built for its venue. You think back to all the, you know, the Baroque music, and that was, you know, for these great big concert halls for rich people and the orchestras and all the instruments, you know, because that, like, there's no sound systems, right? You just need a big, like, pit of people playing this music out into an amphitheater or whatever, right? And, you know, why is it this operatic style the way it is? Well, you just need some bitch that can just has fucking huge pipes, right? Or no one's going to fucking hear her, right? There's right. 500 people there or 1,000 people. How are they going to hear one person? Well, they've just got to have the pipes, right? And then, you know, he was talking about how when the Talking Heads and all them got this, you know, Blondie and whatever, you know, they were punk rock bands in New York. And again, that's a whole different style of punk, not really related to what we're talking about. But he was saying, well, they were playing at CBGB, which, ooh, pop quiz. Do you know what CBGB stands for?
I have no idea.
It's, hold on, let me remember here. Country Bluegrass and Blues is what it stands for. But yet it's this punk rock bar, right? Everything that's cool about punk is a contradiction. So they're talking about like the place was, because it's no longer there, or if someone bought it and revived it, it was at least shut down for a while. It's acoustically horrible. It's horrible. Like it's right. just flat and awful, and the stage isn't big, and it's off in the corner to one side, and it's terrible. But he goes, you know, you did this thing where you just shouted in the microphone really loud, and everything was cranked up, and weirdly, it just started to suit itself. Yeah, if you took those bands and put them into Madison Square Garden or whatever, it wouldn't make any sense. But you just get like these drums just playing as hard as they can, and these cheesy, you know, 20 watt amps just turned up all the way, and someone just shouting as loud as they can into the mic because the PA system can't get them any louder. It sort of makes sense because everyone's packed in there tight. So why wouldn't it make sense for the sound to be tight and overcrowded, right?
Right.
And, you know, he says today the venue is earbuds, and that's what sound is designed for. That's why everything's overproduced and pitch corrected, because it's all injected straight into your ear. So, punk rock evolves this way, being played in shitty little venues and shitty little clubs that, you know, just have a bunch of scooters parked outside because it's tight, right? It's scooter parking. It's the sidewalks overflowing with scooters, right? And the sound is really crowded. So the drummer just goes, and they can't really make sense of what the bassist is doing a lot of times. So you don't have a punk rock band if you don't have a killer drummer. Because the drummer just essentially needs to play blind.
Right.
Right? This is a thing. You know, the singer can kind of do whatever, but the guitarist and the bassist kind of need to be able to hear the drummer, and the drummer just can't really fucking hear anything. Like, punk rock bands, like, there's no they don't have, like, awesome monitors, right? No one comes in and does a sound check, right? And, like, a lot of punk rock bands play for, like, 15, 20 minutes because, like, six bands are playing that night, right? So you've got, like, 5 minutes to just drag your amps and shit onto the stage and set up your drum kit, and then you just fucking go. The sound levels are what the sound levels are. So you get these drummers that are able to just do these amazing things, and they're kind of playing by themselves, but they have to like stop and just do a little, like give the guitarist and everything little cues and opportunities to reset the beat in case they're constantly getting lost. So you get these things that they call blast beats. And it's like drummers are playing like entire little mini solos and then starting like the measures again, like from scratch constantly. And there's a great example of this. You think of a band as being really basic in something like Green Day, right? Green Day is one of, you might think, like the simplest things ever. What could be more three-chord rock than Green Day? But if you've never really listened to Green Day, I want you to listen to the intro of this song, because Green Day has one of, I consider, the top three drummers of all time. And I'm really not fucking around when I say that. You've all heard this song before, but I want you to listen to the drums for the very first time.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once? I am one of those melodramatic fools.
Just wait for it.
Neurotic to the bone, no doubt about it. Sometimes I give myself the
just a little tease, and it just explodes in a second.
Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid? Am I just stuck? I went.
Like, it's constantly starting and stopping itself, and this is all from just this long-standing record of just like no one knows what's going on except maybe the drummer, and he has to constantly give everyone a clue as to, like, you know, okay, you fucked that one up, dun 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 dun, dun. Whoa, here we go again, and starting again. But it occurs to me that those blast beats, that quick, you know, constantly happening, I don't know, is there something to just the ringing out of a two-stroke motor, that ring, ring, there's, I don't, I feel like there might be something there.
I think you're
I might be retconning this a little bit, but you know how we think about, we were talking last week about the biker music and that V-twin rumble and that Steppenwolf guitar rumble sound. Like, even if it's something that no one was consciously thinking of the time, I think retroactively it helps to reinforce the connection. Is that fair to say?
Maybe. I'm not sure. It's an interesting idea.
In any case, it was just fun to talk about punk rock drums for a minute, because go back and just listen to anything truly punk and notice the drums for the first time. If you don't have a killer drummer, you don't have a punk band. You just don't. Whoever it is. So yeah, that was this has been, I think this is a good spot to end. We've gone over half an hour on this. We all come on like 40 minutes on.
Okay.
But punk rock is something that I deeply love, that I take very seriously, because it's so ridiculous, right? It's all a contradiction, and that's super fun. So I don't know. We'll make a decision. I think next week we need to do, I don't know which we're going to do, but I know that you have a lot to do with the motocross homebrew music. I have found, none of it's copyrighted. So I think next week is really just going to be us playing song after song after song and just commenting over it and what's going on. I found one that the chorus is just them doing brap noises.
Nice.
And like, there's this line where he's like, and then I do a wheelie, and then the rest of the band goes, and everyone goes, yay, as part of the chorus. That one of those two Colorado kids rapping about getting straight A's, like, for gas, for gas money is amazing. It's so deep. It's wonderful. But that's something that I can't explain with music theory and history of music. We just have to show the people that music, because there is no explanation of what it is. And there's certainly, I don't know enough about the context of it to really know what has driven. We're just gonna have to listen to the music and theorize what created this.
Yeah, well, it's kind of gonna be a, well, we'll leave it until the episode, but yeah, this is kind of where the confluence of like YouTube and social media and things like mumble rap came along, and
yeah,
all kind of mixed into youth culture and produced some very interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it is all over the place. Like there's no one's bike is as tight as mine is another one of my favorites. Cause that's like that's almost as if like Florida Georgia Line did a motocross rap song. Oh, it's all over the map. It's all over the map. There's metal, there's rap, there's mumble rap, there's pop country, there's everything. But it's the common thread is it's all homebrew, right?
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense though, because motocross does have such a DIY attitude to it.
Yeah.
Like the bikes are so maintenance intensive. It makes sense philosophically the music would be the same way, I guess. I guess it's fair to say we might also just like to give everything, you know, some space to breathe and not go like, oh my gosh, all Pete's been doing is fucking talking about music for like a month straight. We may take a week break from it as well or something, but just know that it's coming and it's going to blow your fucking mind. I mean, maybe even just in the meantime, just Google like motocross rap or motocross punk or motocross metal and just see what pops up in YouTube, because it is fucking hilarious and it is gold. It will shock you that this is a thing.
Well, what's great is that there's no corporate interest stepping on those search terms. Right. So like all the gold is just right at the top.
That's true. There's very little sifting that you have to do. Yes. The only weird thing is that like your YouTube queue will just become corrupted afterwards, because you're going to spend 4 hours listening to this and then all of a sudden you're going to get like weird, like, you know, motocross technique videos and shit popping up in your feed. It's going to get strange, but yeah, whatever. Okay, let's bring this one to a close. This is episode 180, I'm pretty sure. And I don't know, if you've made it to the end and you're a patron or whatever member, you know, check out that for more exclusive content or whatever. And let's just remind everyone to stay safe, stay tuned, and keep fighting the dragon, I guess. This has been an episode, I guess. Let's do our outro.
And I don't want to die, I just want to ride on my motorcycle. Cold.